This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
It's the Mike Francesa Podcast on the BetRivers Network.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the podcast. The Mike Francesa Podcast on the BetRivers Network is brought to you by Casamigos Tequila. Casamigos Tequila is brought to you by those who drink it. We have reached the NBA playoffs. They begin, obviously, tomorrow. There's the two play-in games tonight with both Butler and Zion out. I'm going to go forward with my predictions for the first round series, and I don't think either of the eights will upset the ones. So I expect the Boston Celtics, who will play at 1 o'clock on Sunday, to roll. And I expect Oklahoma City, which plays at 9:30, to roll. So I expect the one seeds to carry on. Now, six other series, and injuries are going to play a very big role in this. Injuries, cohesiveness, where the teams are mentally. There's some interesting and not a lot of series that are one-sided, with maybe the most one-sided of the other series, not counting the 1-8 series, being the Lakers in Denver. I just don't think the Lakers, no matter which way they play their offensive guys with their big two, play their defensive guys with their big two, either way, they're going to get beat here by the Nuggets. That's all there is to it. The Nuggets have the best player in the league, and only by a slim margin because, you know, there's a guy in Dallas who can make a lot of claim about a lot of stuff. And the Nuggets are a substantial favorite, as you would expect. The Lakers won't embarrass themselves, but I just don't think they're going to do a whole lot of winning either, and Denver's not going to get beat in the series. That's all there is to it. And I don't think it's going seven games. So I expect the Nuggets to roll on. Now, in the other 2-7 series, I already talked to you about the Knicks. I gave you the Knicks in seven. The odds have swung a little bit to where the Knicks are either in a pick'em state or a slight favorite in a couple of places. I've seen them pick'em. I've seen them a slight favorite. Yesterday, they were a slight underdog. All right, this series is going to come down to, obviously, Embiid, his schedule, his status, how many minutes he can log. That's going to be the key to this series. I think it's going to be a long series because the schedule is conducive to him being able to get his 30-plus minutes, maybe even moving up to, say, 35 a game. He's only broken 33 times since he came back. But in the fourth quarter the other night, he made some big plays in that one-point win over the Heat. He made three consecutive really big plays. We know how talented he is. We know what a matchup nightmare he is for the Knicks. This schedule is conducive to him being able to get minutes. How the Knicks play when he's off the floor is critical. He's going to be off the floor for anywhere from 13 to 18 minutes a game. And if should he suffer an injury, that series is over. If Robinson or OG get hurt and have any lingering injuries for the Knicks could survive that. They can't survive without, they can't survive in this series without an Embiid who can give them 30 minutes a night. Minimum 30 minutes a night. And probably in the playoffs, closer to 35. The Knicks are going to wear out Brunson and Dante and Hart and even OG, a little less for him, but the other three are going to play monster minutes in the series. It's going to be a good series. It's going to be a very competitive series. It's going to be a physical series. It's going to be a tough series. It's going to be a nuanced series with a lot of adjustments after game one. It's going to be interesting to watch. They have veteran, grizzled, tough guys. They can come at a lot of different looks. They can come at you in a lot of different ways, other than, of course, the 1-2 punch of Embiid and Maxey. I think Knicks in seven. I think the home court could be the difference. If I'm sitting in the seventh game, I like the Knicks in that game. I think the Knicks in seven is the pick. And I think it's going to be a rugged series. I really do. With a lot of twists and turns. elsewhere. Orlando, Cleveland. Cleveland tanked to get this matchup. We know that. They've been a mess in terms of attitude, in terms of cohesiveness, in terms of the injuries, obviously, to Mitchell. There's a lot of talk of upheaval in that franchise, a lot of talks of change in that franchise. But I don't think they're going to lose to Orlando. Orlando's going to have trouble scoring against Cleveland. That's all there is to it. Despite the fact Cleveland is a mess, I think they still have too much to win the series. I think they still win the series. I think Cleveland will win it. I don't think it goes seven games. Phoenix and Minnesota. Be careful with this series. And just to give you an example, Phoenix is the sixth. Minnesota, which had a terrific regular season, has Towns back, is a ultra-defensive team. Ultra-defensive team. They're going to win on defense, but this is probably as bad a matchup as they could get. This is not good. What Phoenix brings to the dance, and is probably healthier than they've been all year, and Phoenix is a disappointment, but what they bring in this matchup offensively is going to be a nightmare for Minnesota. And I think everyone agrees because Phoenix is favored now in the series. They're a slight favorite. They shouldn't be. They should be an underdog, but they're not. They don't have home court. They didn't play as well as Minnesota. Minnesota has an ultra defense. But the bottom line is this is the guys that Phoenix has offensively, and with the firepower they have and the star power they have, it's a bad matchup. Bad matchup for Minnesota. I think Phoenix wins. I think it'll be a long series, but I think Phoenix wins. Indiana and Milwaukee. Milwaukee has come apart at the seams. Hey, this series comes down to one thing and one thing only. It does not look like the Freak's going to play game one. We don't know if he's going to play game two. If he's back for game three, and Milwaukee salvage one of the first two games, they can still win the series. Freak plays five games in the series, Milwaukee wins. He plays less than five games, I think Indiana beats them. If Freak's not healthy, if he doesn't come back in the series, Milwaukee's going to lose. And that, what a nightmare that's going to be scenario for what was expected in Milwaukee. I mean, let's be honest, the little thing's been a disaster. They've had guys who are playing miserably. They've had guys they expected to really step up this year who have done a lousy job. They've fallen apart defensively since Doc took over. Nothing is working for them right now. And now it comes down to one thing. If the Freak's there, Indiana has no answer for him. And he's going to dominate. And he's going to win the games. I think Lillard's going to surprise people. I'm going to give him this last chance here, and I'm going to think the playoffs wake him up. Let's see if that happens. I expect him to make his presence felt in a couple of these games. But it's one thing and one thing only. I'll give it to you. I'd stay away from the series because you're basing it on an injury. As a matter of fact, in the next two series we're going to talk about, you're going to base a lot of it on injuries. Number one, if he plays five games in the series, I think Milwaukee will win. It doesn't look like he's playing game one. I don't know if he's playing game two. He's got a calf injury. Calves are very tricky to heal. They do not heal easily, and they do not heal properly. A lot of times you come back and you re-injure. It's a tricky. I've talked to trainers about calf injuries a couple of times in my life. I know, and I have a guy who does that on the NFL level where he runs a team, and he has always told me calves are some of the trickiest injuries they deal with. It's very hard to know when a guy is ready to come back because a lot of times he seems like he's ready and he's not. You know he wants to play. They're going to sit him probably one. If they win one, I think they'll probably sit him two and try and get him healthy for game three, give him another week off, get him ready for game three. Like I said, I'm going to make the number five. If he plays five games, I think they win. If he doesn't, I think they lose. Mavs and Clippers. Clippers are the better team, but two things here. Other than Jokic, Luka is the best player on the planet, and he might be as good. He's that good. And he has been brilliant in the playoffs. Brilliant. Not good, brilliant. Leonard wins when he plays. Is he going to play? If he plays, can he play? Is he going to play minutes? Is he going to bow out of the series after one game? Who knows? Too many question marks for me. Luke is not a question mark. He can dominate. If he gets enough out of the 2 and 3 guys on that team, and you know who I'm talking about, not one of my favorites. If that happens, Mavs win. I got to go with the Mavs here in this series. A lot of people think the Clippers could go a long way. Yeah, well, you're banking on Leonard, though, and you have no idea. If Leonard's healthy, watch out. But what makes you think he's healthy? Who knows if he's playing? Who knows how long he's playing, or if he's playing, or if he's back for the next game, if he plays one game? It's too much to deal with when you know on the other side you got a guy who's going to go, you know, 35-9-9 in the series. I'm taking the Mavs. So Orlando Cavs, I take the Cavs. Even though they're in disarray, they'll still beat Orlando. Orlando will have a lot of trouble scoring. That'll be a low-scoring series. Lakers-Nuggets, it's a no-brainer. Nuggets are winning. Phoenix-Minnesota, I'm going with the Suns. I don't like the Suns, but I'm going with the Suns because I think their offense is a terrible matchup for Minnesota. Indiana-Milwaukee, I gave you the number. If the Freak plays 5 games, I think they win. If not, I think they're going to lose. And I'm going with the Mavs over the Clippers. I went with the Knicks over the Sixers in 7. And we will do a post-game podcast after game 1. Knicks play at 6 o'clock tomorrow night. We'll have a podcast up after the game tomorrow night. So right after the game, come down. I'm going to put a podcast together based on what happened in game 1, what I need to see in game 2, what adjustments need to be made, and everything else. We'll do a podcast. Look for it after game 1. It should be up. I don't know how long it'll take for them to turn it around. Not that long. So the game's at 6. It's over 8:30-ish, 8:45. It'll be up not that long after that. I'll come right down after the game's over, and I will tape it. A couple things heading to baseball for the weekend. You know, I talked about this series in L.A. and the fear I had if the Mets got their reeling. Well, you know what? The Mets didn't get their reeling. Give them credit. They're 10-8. They've won 8 of the last 10 games. It all turned around on that Alonso home run and that after an 0-5 start. So after an 0-5 start, they're 10-8, which means they've won 10 of their last 13 games, and they've actually won 8 of their last 10 games. And the reason why has been some clutch hitting, especially at the bottom of the lineup, and their pitching has been terrific. Tonight's Manaea against the one who got away. Here you can see Yamamoto. You can take out your displeasure, the Mets can, with Yamamoto tonight. Now, Yamamoto's, we know what happened his first start. He's 1-1 with a 4.5 ERA. He has struck out 21 batters in 16 innings. He has pitched better on the mound tonight against Manaea. Okay, so the Mets get a chance to go after the one who got away this evening. He's on the mound against the Mets. Buddha, who has been terrific. I mean, his 2 starts have been unbelievable for the Mets. You know, I took Harrison to a spring training game. He pitched. He started that game that day when I went to see the Mets and the Astros when we were down in Florida. And he's turned out to be a big deal here. He's been, you know, they've had a lot of guys step up and be surprises. Of course, Garrett, Buddha. Buddha's got an 0.75 ERA and an 0.75 whip in his 2 starts in 12 innings. Is that going to continue? We're going to find out against a terrific lineup. So, Manaea tonight, Buddha tomorrow, as the Mets open 3 in L.A. and then go to San Francisco for 3. The Rays come to Yankee Stadium. Always interesting when they come. They're in at 11-9. They got off to a rocky start. They've kind of played back and forth in recent days. They beat the Angels a series before coming in here. you always want to get a look at what the Rays have to offer. Yes, Baltimore's good. You know that. Yankees right now are tied with Cleveland, surprising Cleveland, with the most wins in baseball at 13. Cleveland has 13. Yankees have 13. The Rays are 11-9. You know the Rays are always competitive. You know they always have some new faces. And obviously, you want to get a feel for them. And you get a chance this weekend as the Rays come in to visit Yankee Stadium. Now, early season surprises. We've played almost 20 games. Okay? Usually you wait another month for this, but just an early look after this 20-game, or anywhere between 18 and 20, depending on the team. Cleveland's a big surprise at 13-6. That's a surprise. Kansas City's a surprise at 12-7. Pittsburgh's been surprisingly good, although they just had a rough week, couple of days in New York. Washington at 8-10. I took Washington as an under. I thought Washington would lose over 100 games this year. I still do. But they've gotten off fairly decent. They're 8-10, which is a better start than anybody thought and a lot better start than I thought. So I'd put Cleveland at 13-6, Kansas City at 12-7, and Washington at 8-10 as the surprises. Disappointments? Easy. Houston is 6-14. The Astros opened the season with 4 losses to the Yankees. They haven't recovered. They're 6-14. Throw out the COVID year, 2020. Astros haven't had a season where they won under 90 games. And a lot of those years, they won over 100 games. Since 2016, they won 86 that year. 2016 was the last time they didn't win 90 games in a full season. Are they going to recover from this? It's now 20 games. They're 6-14. They haven't recovered from the 0-4 start yet. Miami opened 0-9, so you knew they'd be here. They're 4-15. So they've played 4-6 since an 0-9 start. Better, but not good. And remember, they were a big surprise last year. Played over their heads. Now, opened 0-9. Now they're 4-15. That's a rough start. That's the kind of start I feared for the Mets, because that kind of start, it's going to take you now to the All-Star break, a team like Miami to dig out from 4-15. If they ever do dig out. You just try to win one more game a week than you lose. That's all you try to do. And just try to check it off, check it off, check it off. That's it. You know, they're not a team that's going to go win 7 or 8 in a row. Now, a couple of guys, before we get to the emails, a couple of guys jump out. Everyone's screaming about Betts, and they should. 6 homers, 18 RBIs, 22 runs scored. You're going to see Betts tonight. Betts has been the best player in baseball so far. 1.137 OPS, batting 369 with a 470 on base percentage, do everything player, and 6 home runs, 18 RBIs, and 22 runs scored. That's more than a run a game. He has 22 runs scored and 18 RBIs. That is an incredible start. How about Ozuna for the Braves? 8 homers, 23 runs batted in, hitting .352 with a 1.135 OPS. 8, and how about that 23 ribbies already on the season? 8 homers, 23 ribbies. So Ozuna, everyone talking about, obviously, other guys in that lineup who had huge years last year. Acuna, Olsen. It's been Ozuna who has opened up and just gone wild. And I got to mention one other guy. A guy named Trout. 74 at-bats, 8 home runs. Has he found the fountain of youth? Is this going to be a old-time Trout year? Hitting .270, which is fine. Hasn't had a lot of ribbies yet, but, you know, that lineup is a product of how many runs batted in he's going to get. 8 home runs, and one other thing, 5 stolen bases. Now, is that significant? Well, it might be a significant look at how he feels, because the last 4 years combined, he has 6 stolen bases. This year, he's got 5 already. So he might be feeling frisky at 32 years of age. Not too old to have a huge season. The question is, how long does he remain with the Angels? Or is there a move in his future that finally sends him somewhere where he can see the light of day and maybe find his way to the postseason? 8 home runs, 74 at-bats, 5 stolen bases. Your emails when we come back.
You're listening to the Mike Francesa podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
All right, we haven't done emails in a while. Let's check them out. Obviously, you can send your emails to me at MikeFrancesaPodcast@gmail.com. MikeFrancesaPodcast@gmail.com. Gmail.com. Here we go. Richard starts us off. Who do you like better as a player, Brunson or Maxey? I like Maxey. I've always liked Maxey. I'm not surprised by Maxey's career. You're asking who's a better player, him or Brunson? Brunson has moved to a different level. Brunson has gone from being a backup point guard to a reliable starter to a borderline all-star to a superstar player in very short order. Now, there is going to be a lot of scrutiny on him now to play the way he has played in the playoffs. It is a different deal. It is a different dedication. There'll be a different dedication to stopping him. It will take more from him to do the same in the playoffs. He has averaged, since Randall went down, 31 points a game. He's almost averaged 40 points a game in his last 8 and 9 games, something like 38 points or something like that. He has gone to be an all. I mean, he's not going to win the MVP. I know people want to give him MVP votes. That's fine. You know what? He's not the best player in the league. No one's saying he is. First of all, we know who the 2 best players in the league are. And we know where they live, and they live west. And he doesn't make first team All-NBA. I think he makes second team, which is, he's in the top 10 players in the league. As LeBron James said about him, hey, he has opened everybody's eyes and is playing at an elite level. That means the penthouse. Does he continue that, or is he a playoff disappointment? I think he'll continue it. But again, a very big part of that series is, yes, how many points Brunson gets, clearly how many minutes and points Embiid gets, but how many shots does it take them to get it? How about the integrity of their scoring? Do they do it efficiently, or do they do it because they're using massive volume to get the same numbers? That's positive for the other defense. You expect shooting numbers to go down in the postseason. Why? Because teams are dedicating and they're playing on a different level in terms of intensity. Knicks don't. Knicks, that's why a lot of people worry about the Knicks in the playoffs, because they say they play on that level during the regular season. They don't have another level to go to. Well, I think there's a little more they can go to, but not a lot, because they do give a lot of effort all the time, which is why they win those games. Now everyone gives effort. Now everyone dedicates everything to game plan, to the same opponent. They make the adjustments. They do the defensive diligence. They do what they have to do to stop people, especially big stars. You know what they're thinking. Hey, make somebody else on that team. If I'm devising a game plan, I'm like, guys, we are going to harass Brunson and make somebody else score on that team consistently. Let them show us that they have another scorer on that team now with that lineup that they can count on. Who the number 2 is for the Knicks day in, day out in the playoffs is key. It's most likely Dante, but does he get there by chucking up a million threes, or does he get there with efficiency? Energy baskets by Hart are going to be critical, and that means runouts when he gets the runouts, take it to the basket when he sees the opening, and getting offensive putbacks. What the Knicks do on the offensive glass is critical. It has been all year. It's been one of their great strengths. OG's defensive presence and his versatility on defense to be able to guard everybody and watch from the start. Does Tibbs use him to harass Embiid, or does he have him shut down one player? Or does he use him on multiple players based on what's in the lineup? Watch how OG is deployed defensively. It's going to be one of the fascinating little parts of this game because he's capable of basically playing almost anybody on the floor. That's how good he is defensively. And that's why it takes his team to another level. As I told you, Hart took him to one level in terms of energy and cohesiveness, and then OG took him to another level. And that's where they reside now. But in the playoffs, baskets are harder to come by. Knicks lead the league in shots taken in the final 6 seconds of the clock. Number one in the league. How you do in the playoffs in those situations, how good your look is, and how many you can knock down in those spots are very much keys to your success. Brunson's going to get his. The question is, how hard does he have to work to get him? Matt, why do you hate Liv? I'll tell you why I hate Liv. I'm a big believer in economic freedom, so I have no problem with the fact that they went and took the money. I will never, ever say anything to an athlete who takes big money. Who am I or anybody else to say this guy shouldn't take advantage of his talents and set his family up for generations? Hey, as a man, your job is to protect and feed your family first. That's your first job. If you're a man, you're head of a household, you have a family, your job is to protect them and support them in every way, including financially. If someone does that and takes extreme money, no one has a right to say no. But the product Liv is giving us is garbage. First of all, I'm a traditionalist. I don't want to see them change the sport. I don't like the team concept. I don't want to see them changing it to 54 holes. I don't want to see them, you know, playing all kinds of music and wearing Bermuda shorts and wacky shirts. I don't want to see that. I like the game of golf the way it was. I like the tradition of it. If you take the traditions out of sports, you have nothing. Because what it's built on is tradition. Where you play, the stadium you play in, the uniform you wear, the history your team has, that is part of what the current players have to live up to. That's what we talk about all the time about being a Yankee. What are you talking about? You're talking about their history and their tradition. Golf has tradition. It has a history. Liv has no history. They have money. They are floating on money. That's it. And I don't find their product the least bit appealing. And I love Phil Mickelson. I miss watching him play. I miss watching Koepka play. I miss watching DeChambeau play. I miss watching Dustin Johnson play. You know what? I miss those guys. I admit it. But I don't like the product they're playing in. I don't care about team concept. I don't care that Rom's team is going to be worth $1 billion in 10 years. That means nothing to me. That's fine for Rom, but I don't care about that. Mike, how do you define the complicated legacy of O.J. Simpson? Well, first, are we talking athletics? Or are we talking his life? His life was a disaster, obviously. His performance, he was one of the great collegiate players of all time. He was one of the great running backs of all time. There's no disputing that. There's no issue there. He was a great player. I saw him play as a collegian. I saw him play in person against the Jets when he was in Buffalo. He was a great, great player. As to the rest, hey, it was a nightmare. So I don't know how else you want to define it. He was a great, great talent who had the world as at his fingertips, always did. And his rage or jealousy or whatever it was that caused him, and I firmly believe he committed those murders. I mean, I always have. He was obviously extremely jealous of his ex-wife, and it was an issue for him, and he couldn't handle it. But it was a three-ring circus. Frank, do the Yanks try to sign Soto in season? It won't come to that. You know that. With Boris, you know that's not going to happen. Soto has a game plan. He is going to perform brilliantly this year, and then he's going to sit back, and he's going to ask for a truckload of money. He will not be signing in season. That would defeat the entire game plan they have. Wilson, what's the most important position for the Giants to address in the offseason? The Giants did enough work on the offensive line that they can take a wide receiver. I fully expect the Giants in the draft coming up, and we'll do a lot of draft next week. I expect the Giants at 6 to take Neighbors out of LSU. Harrison would be the pick. He's not going to be there. He's going to be off the board. He will never get past the Chargers at 5. He'll go 5 if Arizona winds up trading that pick to Minnesota so they can take a quarterback. If not, Harrison will go 4 to Arizona. If he doesn't go 4 to Arizona, he'll go 5 to the Chargers. He will be off the board before the Giants. If Harrison is ever on the board, the Giants should take him with both hands. The Giants want the speed guy. I like Adunze a lot. I watch Washington a lot. I like him a lot. They want the speed guy from LSU who's got a little bit of a shaky background, but I'm sure they did their due diligence. I can't comment on that because I never met the kid. But he's a blur, and that's what they want. So I think the Giants will address a position of distinct need. They need a game-breaking wide receiver, and that's what they're going to take. All things considered, I think, well, unless Harrison's on the board, which I do not expect under any circumstance, the Giants at 6 will take Neighbors from LSU. That's what I believe. That's what I hear. And that's what I believe will happen. I don't think there's smoke screening that they're going to surprise somebody with a quarterback pick. I would be shocked if they did that. I think they're taking the wide receiver. And I think they're taking the speed wide receiver. Remember, tomorrow we will be on after the Nick game. So as soon as the game ends, you want to, within a couple of minutes, look for the podcast. I'll have my thoughts on game one, what to look for game two. The days off between games one and two in a close series, and this will be a close series, are some of the most critical days of the entire postseason. That's when you make your adjustments. And there will be adjustments to be made in the series. A big key is going to be the health of Embiid, but from what I saw the other night and with the schedule set up the way it is, I think they can get 30 minutes plus, maybe even pushing 35 out of Embiid. The key is going to be how the Knicks handle him and what they do in the minutes he's off the floor. It's going to be critical in this series. Enjoy your Friday. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Mike Francesa podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.